accession number 288-96, reel 7.
Mr. Blewitt, reel 7. What was the name of the command structure that your company was under?
Well, it was anti-aircraft brigade, but exactly what the number was, I wouldn't know. I can't remember that. All we were associated with was the locals. We used to come into contact with, like, gun sites, and they were all, as far as I know, they were all come under the same northeastern area, on gun sites, searchlights, things like that, scattered all round the northeast, far round as Hartlepool, I think they went up to Newcastle, and back down again. Ripping roundabout there.
And you were carrying essentially their food supplies from the depot?
Essentially, food supplies for the men. At that time, I don't think there was women on the searchlights. I think they come into it a bit later on in the war. Essentially, it was rations. And as far as the gun sites were concerned, of course, we had to take ammunition, which we had to go and pick it up, and then they used to unload it into arsenals round about the gun sites.
And this essentially was the searchlight and then the aircraft defending
the course,
and the coastline.
Yeah, round about Middlesbrough, Redcar, Hartlepool, all along the course there, Scarborough.
And that first winter was a pretty horrendous winter.
Right.
And
yes,
were you able to keep them going and get through with your trucks?
Well, when it started, the winter as such, we were still under canvas, and then we moved up to this Kirkbank Hall, where it was a big house. Most of the company were in the house, but we were unlucky. Junior section, I suppose. And they put us in the stables. It was the only place was, which they'd cleared out, straw, manure, and God knows what. And they just said, "There's your palliasse. That's where you are." So
it must have been pretty tough conditions.
Oh, it was. Yeah, it was. Like I say, when you were in the stables, it was all straw down. We had palliasses filled with straw. There's no. Well, we had a raincoat cum ground sheet, so they all went on the floor, and then we, three blankets, no pillars, so you made a pillar out of your kit bag with your stuff in, put it in, and that was it.
Every morning did you have a parade?
Yes. Well, the parade was such, the bugler used, who was in our lot, in our hut, Sammy Smith, who was he always said he was in the guards at one time, but it was, I think it was just hearsay. And they used to, the guard, whoever's on at that time, 6 o'clock, he'd come and bang on the door, because the doors were mostly always open because the smell. "Come on, Sammy." And Sammy used to just sort of poke his head out of the door and blast Rivali. And then you start to get up, get dressed, get washed. And the conditions for washing was practically nil at that time. Somebody would get a bucket of water and they'd all dive in. You know, the one who was in last was hard luck. You know, scooping the scum off the top. And then you'd go around to the big tent. It was like a marquee tent where the breakfast was on. It was after you'd had your breakfast that you went on parade. Parade would be about 8:30, 9 o'clock. And then you'd get detailed officer where you were going to go for the day.
And you did mention that to keep the lorries running, you had to drain them.
Oh, yes. You'd have to drain the radiators.
There was no antifreeze.
So that was another chore. If you had a lorry, at that time I didn't. I was only a learner driver. So I didn't have the responsibility of filling them up. But of course, if it said, like, you'd get on parade and they'd say, well, so and so. And I think it was the night before, the drivers used to get a work ticket so they'd know where they were going the next day. And they'd also know which learner driver was with them. So, of course, you had to help out. Help him down with a bucket of water, fill it up, take buckets back and whatnot. And then sometimes, when it had, before they got sorted out with like a makeshift car park, if you were in the mud, you'd have to take a shovel, and while he was trying to get the lorry out, you were digging your way, making a path for him as well, you know. And it was a bad winter, and it was...
Did you have to keep the lorries spick and span clean?
No. Well, you were supposed to, but with this mud, you couldn't do more on mud. If you kept them running, you were doing good. This was, mind, at this time, this is when we were working with commandeered lorries. It was all shapes and sizes. And as long as they were running, they didn't have much idea. I think at the back of their minds, they must have thought, well, we weren't going to have them for long. We will eventually get new lorries. So they weren't too bothered about the condition of them. As long as they run, that was the main thing. Keep the mud out. So you used to just help in with the... As long as you got down to the mob store. And this was at a time when... I think I told you later about the reps. But we didn't have no reps. The mob has trusted you. You went down there and the driver... You were getting, say, rations for 1, 2, 3 company artillery. And used to check them onto the lorry. And if you could, nick a bit off somebody else's pile on your lorry. And away you used to go. Get to Ripon Racecourse, for instance, where the big, to where they were actually living on the racecourse. And the cook, Sergeant Cook or whatever, he used to be there to see you unloaded off what you're supposed to have. And then when the lorry was empty, us learner drivers, we got behind the wheel and we drove back. As far as I was concerned, that was the best part of the day, because to get behind the wheel and come back, wasn't too bothered about.
Did the pilfering that you've kind of touched upon, did it become rather serious, and were people not getting what they
needed? No, it wasn't serious. If you got a few tins of fruit or something to share with your mates, that was about it. There was not big deal, because if you did, you were pinching off somebody else's food. And normally, the sergeant cook or whoever was checking out the other end, he knew he what he wanted. And the eagle eye, he used to see that he got it. If you managed to get anything past him, well, you regard that as something good. Like, you go back to camp and say, we're all right tonight, 2 tins of fruit or whatever. You know, that was it. But it was nothing big.
At what point did you get your new lorries, the army lorries?
It was just later on in 1940, I think, it's when they started to come in. It would be the early days of 1940. Well, not the early days, but 1940.
Because
I always remember there were OY Bedfords.
What's the OY?
Well, I have photographs and all, but I don't know. OY was just like a serial number for the type of lorry, and QLs were another name for the world, but were all Bedfords. There was 1 or 2 Albion lorries, which were like petrol. They had a big petrol tank on the back, and they were Albions. But
did you have water carriers amongst
the
vehicles?
No, not at that time. No.
So these were basically what, 30 hundredweight lorries? That kind.
Three tonners. They had 1 or 2 50 and 100 weight, but they were just little odd things that used to float around doing little menial tasks between them. But there were, we had three tonners, and the QLs were three tonners, but the rather high in the cab.
Can you describe the vehicle? Can you describe it? The old wise and.
Well, there was it was just like a covered-in cab. It was a tarpaulin, was the rest of it.
We're shooting from the elements. I mean, you're completely covered in as driver.
Oh, the driver, yes, the cab. Oh, yes, that was all right. And as I say, after having these commandeered lorries, which sometimes didn't have any windows in at all, at least it was. Oh, yes, it was good to drive them.
I think some of the early army lorries just had the windscreen, but no cover, didn't they?
Well, the territorial ones, which we were supposed to learn on, which I never even got a chance to get on, with the war being declared, they were just sort of put onto one side. And there were big, hefty things, as you say, with not wind-up windows. They just had a tarpaulin, which you used to pull down on the side and whatnot, an open window. So I never got a chance to get on them anywhere. The OYs, when we did get them, they were like really modern, you know, so it was all right.
Was it a good lorry, good vehicle?
Oh, yes, a very good vehicle. Both them and the QLs. The only thing about the QL wagons, they were a bit top heavy. Not at that time, but once. I wasn't on it, but I was driving it. But it wasn't my lorry as such. It wasn't signed out to me. It was just one of the sergeants. He said, take the QL up to the car park. This was Scotland. And I went flying along. I wanted to get back, to get out. I went round this bend, and I could feel it heel over. And I thought, oh, my God. Fortunately, it come back. But I was very, very wary of the QLs. When they were top-heavy, they weren't... They weren't too nice to drive, but the OYs, they were different again. They were champion.
And were you allocated, when you could drive, were you allocated your own lorry? Or
yeah.
Did you?
No, when you passed out as such, you had, to start with, you just had any lorry that was vacant. If a driver was ill or on leave or whatever, you just took his lorry. That was all right. But eventually, you got your own lorry. And you used to look after it, you know. That was the time you used to really clean it, you know. Because you were responsible for the cleanliness. Every month, you used to have an inspection. The NCO in charge of your little section used to come out. Well, he didn't come out. He come down to the lorry and inspected it and marked it down, which he thought was good and bad points, you know, which I suppose went against you. But normally, you looked after it yourself, because it was up to you to use it. It was your benefit.
And when you say looked after, how much of that was knowledge was with the oil and the petrol, the engine, whatever?
Well,
that you were supposed to have.
With the OYs, when we got the new wagons, you also got a task book. You had 16 tasks to perform, I remember, and you had to perform one of these tasks every day. Check all oils, you know, engine oil, sump oil, whatever. And you had them to do, which mostly consisted of just checking it, you know, with a stick. He never had the job of absolutely draining it and whatnot. Unless it was every now and then that come around, it would be in the book, time to drain the oil, and then the next day come round, or the next task would be to the carburetor. So you'd have the carburetor to take to bits, supposed to be. I was always one of them that thought, well, if it's running, well, leave it alone. maybe just check for dirt in the carburetor or something like that. And that you used to go through these 16 tasks every day with that. There was nothing really technical, not too technical.
Where there was a more serious problem, who did that? Who carried out that repair?
Well, we had a workshop section. And if during the course of driving them, there was something, you thought there was something wrong with the vehicle, you reported it when you get back, and you were sent down to workshops. At that time, they were at North Allerton. When we were at Kirkbank, we had a little workshop section there, little just a shop, but the main depot was at North Allerton. They'd taken over half the United garage, I remember, and used to get sent down there to with your lorry, report to the SMS, I think they call it. And who was a very nice fella, by the way. And they would say, "What's the matter with it? You know, oh, it'll be so and so." He could, you know, all the plugs. Oh, that was another thing. Plugs, you had to take the plugs out and clean them every day. Task. Not every day, but one of the tasks of the day. So they used to go down to the workshops, they used to sort it out and back.
You looked after your lorries like, I suppose, a cavalryman looked after his horse, in a
exactly,
way.
Exactly. Not as good, because we were working down Louth, and there was a cavalry company down there, the Hussars, and you'd see them walking through the town when it was dusk. Walking, the horses back, and the chap in the front with a lamp, and one at the back with a lamp. We're talking to them, of course, in our leisure time, and they were cursing the horses because they had to, whatever they had to do, the horses come first. They had to feed them, rub them down, whatnot, make sure the horses were in good condition, bedded down for the night, and then they could go and look after themselves. And I used to think, I'd sooner look after the lorry than look after a horse.
So you after the morning parade, you were given your task, and obviously you went into doing it. How long was your working day? Was there a specific time when you were finished?
Well, just if you went out to deliver rations to the company, you used to just do that. Sometimes you were invited, not often, maybe a cup of tea and a bun or whatever was at the cookhouse. If you happened to be there when the meals were out, you were invited to have a cup of tea. But mostly you had to come when you had to wait. No strict meal times, so you went away and then you come back. And if you missed the dinner time meal, well, that was hard luck. You had to wait till the tea time, you know, you didn't have no specific time. That's why I say, when, if you could, and you could get a little something to keep you going during the day. Otherwise, if you missed a meal, that was hard luck. You're supposed to go in theory, and they'd say, "Oh, hard luck, meal time's finished," you know. So you'd, if you knew in your mind that you were going to miss a meal, you'd try, when you come back, to pull up at the shop where they may have, in those days, and I'm talking about the early days before the rations started, you'd go in like cake shop, maybe get a bun or a sandwich or something like that, keep you going until the meal time when you come back.
Now, what about clothing? You'd been issued with your khaki uniforms,
oh, yeah,
obviously. What about your working clothing? Was it still?
You had he had your dress uniform as such, which was a battle dress, because when we first started, we had a service dress, buttons and whatnot, and then as the war progressed, they decided they would have this battle dress. And you were supposed to hand in your service dress. I hung on to mine as long as I could, because I used to start to go to a dance, and a service dress used to always look better than a battle dress. And so you had this battle dress, and you also had like a denims, a jacket, more or less the same thing, only just rough for work, denim jacket, denim that and trousers. That was to do your overall while you're working on the wagon.
She must have got pretty well greased up at times.
Oh, terrible, terrible. Some of them was what you used to try and do was win another pair of trousers or something like that. So when you was got really hacky, you know, you'd burn them and get your other ones. But you were supposed to, in theory, you were supposed to go back and hand them in to get washed. Where they used to wash them, I don't know. I suppose it was the laundry or whatever. I don't suppose there for a minute they would be bothered about with the grease or whatnot. But you used to always try, and that was where the service corps was good. I mean, the poor infantry, they had no chance of getting anything like that. But the service corps, when we used to take the stuff around, you'd always try and borrow another set of trousers or whatever. So, or socks was a big thing. If you could win a pair of socks.
You say win, you mean borrowing or
purloin?
Purloin.
You used to always say, have you won out today? Like, yeah. And that was it. Socks would have been a big demand. And they were always good. Even the Yanks tried to swap their socks when they come into the war. They would try and get our grey woolen socks. They had like cotton things, and they used to always try, and you could always do a swap with the Yanks as far as socks. So socks were in big demand, which also kept you from darning your old ones. Nobody ever used to stitch the ends together. That was about it, you know.
It could be sore on your feet, of course, if you have this ridge of stitching.
There were kit inspection every now and then.
Yes, I was going to ask you about kit inspection. Now, what form did that take?
Sorry?
I was going to ask you about kit inspections.
You used to have to keep your kit out every day, what you weren't using, a knife, fork, spoon and whatnot, your overcoat, gas mask, everything laid on top of your blanket, because in them days there was no beds, and you used to have to just leave these out, and every now and then there would be a kit inspection this week, Saturday, Sunday or whenever, and you had to take all your kit out, razors, hairbrush, shoe brush, and have them all out, and then cursory inspection, more or less, just to see you had them, not to see what condition they were in, as long as you had them. Although they were a bit hot on razors, you know, make sure you had a clean razor and razor blades. They were all loose razor blades in them days. And as I mentioned before, like, man was always in pristine condition because I never used to shave until that day with the sergeant major. When from tomorrow you'll start shaving, Blewett. Yes, sir.
And who carried out the inspection?
Sergeant major, mostly. Was an officer who was supposed to be. There was an officer, orderly officer, the orderly corporal, and the sergeant major. And so the orderly corporal, or whoever he was, or the orderly NCO, he used to go around with a notebook. But if your name went in the notebook for that, but it was the orderly officer who used to do, you know, that's wrong, where's this, where's that, and then the CSM that used to give you the talking to, where is it? Well, it was there, you know. So the thing was, in them days, you never admitted, or you never told anybody in the hood, well, not the hood, in your billet, that you'd lost your knife. You never told anybody that. Knife, fork, spoon, or anything like that. You never told anybody. You used to just go and pinch somebody else's, and then they just went on a roundabout effect for that.
I was going to ask you about stealing. Obviously, that some took place.
Oh, there was some. Fortunately, in our company, there wasn't a lot of pilfering going on. But I always remember one day, somebody had a watch stolen, and such a to-do. I think it must have been off an officer or somebody, or a senior NCO. And everybody had to stand by the beds. That was a queer thing. When I say beds, but where you were laying. And there was corporals, sergeants, corporals, lance corporals, everybody was dug in, like, to stand at the door and watch to see nobody hid anything. And they went through the belongings. They'd come round and empty your kit out, looking. We didn't know it afterwards, but it was obvious they were looking for a specific thing, like a watch. They didn't bother about extra socks or anything like that. Put them on. And then suddenly the cry come out. All ranks on parade. Just leave them. Went out and come. There was a sergeant major, I think, come in front. The article we were looking for has been found. Go back and do your... get your gear together again, like. Then shortly afterwards, one bloke, he got moved to another company, so we surmised that he was the one that was, like, he would just get moved onto another company, and then there may be a note to go with him to say what kind of a... But that was about the only time we ever really... Other times, he just... Like I say, if I lost a knife, fork or spoon, I'd just go and I'd take yours, put it down there, like, and then you'd find you'd lost it, so you'd move.